Parsha Vayera opens with Avram's famous act of Hachnosas Orchim, although he's in the Hachnosas Orchim business, and he has his Eshel, which he keeps going for years and years, but there's special mention made for many reasons of this outstanding act of hospitality in the beginning of Vayera. After all, it's 3 days after the Mila, he's 99 years old, and he's visited by what the Torah refers to as Shlosha Anoshim, three men, although we very quickly discover that these are not three ordinary men. And Rashi, in fact, details what each one of them was there to do. Rashi tells us from Chazal, famously, that one malach cannot do more than one job, which is actually a worthy lesson for human beings as well, who we often try to do everything. But Rashi tells us that one of the malachim was there to tell Sarah she's going to have a child. Another of the malachim is there in order to heal Avram. And the third malach is there, actually, he doesn't really have much to do with Avram because he's there to destroy Sodom, but he can't do that until he's accompanied by another one of the malachim, Bloat. Which actually brings us to the final statement of Rashi, and that is that Raphael, who healed Avram, went on to save Lot, which on the face of it seems like something of a retraction from the original statement that a malach can only do one thing, and then almost within the same breath Rashi says, and then the one who healed Avram went on to do this other thing. Clearly, there is a certain affinity between these two tasks of healing Avram and saving Lot. The one who healed Avram, Rashi tells us his name, he is Raphael, and of course, that's not surprising, Raphael, Milashon Refua. And he goes on to save Lot as well. Now, these words of Rashi, I believe, are quite well known. What's not so well known, if we broaden the discussion just a little bit, is that Rashi has presented to us one opinion within those opinions of Chazal. That is to say, Rashi's source is in the Medrash Brachos Rabbah, exactly as he stated it. The three malachim are with Avram. Raphael, who healed Avram, went on to save Lot. But we should also note that a very similar discussion takes place in the Gemara, Talmud Bavli, in Maseches Bav Metzia and Daf Pei Vav Amud Beis, and it goes through almost identically. You have Michael, who's telling Sarah she'll have a child, and you have Gavriel, who's there to, in time, destroy Sodom. Raphael heals Avram. And then, says the Gemara, Michael went on to save Lot. The Gemara tells us that it was Michael that accompanied Gavriel to Sodom. It was Raphael. His business was concluded and he left. He was not one of the two that went to Sodom. So it's an interesting machlokas, really. I mean, who was the one that went on to save Lot? Was it Raphael who healed Avram? Or was it Michael? And this really reminds us that Rashi's job, although most of Rashi, it's fair to say, is Chazal. The vast majority of Rashi's comments are from Chazal. And yet, he is not there merely, quote-unquote, to quote Chazal, to bring us Chazal, as if Rashi wasn't there, we would have done it. No. A lot of Rashi's job is still how to bring Chazal, or if there is more than one opinion, which one of them to choose. So just the fact that these are not Rashi's words, it doesn't mean that Rashi hasn't put his fingerprints on them, because he chose one approach where there are two or more. And the Maharal says very simply that although we would say Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim, there's room to understand all of them, but Rashi, of course, will choose what is most intuitive, that is to say, what's most reasonable, what's most straightforward. Between these two malachim, who was the one that went on to save Lot? There's a straighter line, seemingly, a more intuitive line between Raphael and healing Avram and saving Lot. After all, saving from destruction. When you think about it, a more extreme way of healing from sickness. And that's why Rashi makes that choice. It's interesting to ponder as we just pick up the coattails of this discussion. So what about the Gemara? After all, the Gemara sees all of these Malachim, Gabriel, Raphael, and Michael, and the Gemara maintains that it was Michael who went on to save Lot. How are we to understand? Even if it's not the opinion that Rashi chose, but it's there, what perhaps would be the background to that understanding? And I believe we may suggest, by prefacing with a pre-question, namely, why was Lot saved? After all, he doesn't seem to be that much of a tzaddik, and he gravitated towards Sodom. At the end of the day, what was so different about him than anybody else? And this question is discussed by Chazal. What outstanding merits did he have? Rashi actually quotes two statements, which seems apparently to mean that they work together. It could be very simply and rather hollowly for Lot, he was saved because he was related to Avram, which leaves zero credit or merit on Lot's part. But very simply, he had what they call protectia. He has mishpacha with Avram. And therefore, that's what got him through, simple as can be. Don't look for any outstanding deeds or actions, because you won't find any, but he's Avram's nephew, so he gets saved. And Rashi quotes that. We mentioned a couple of weeks ago, that's why Lot wasn't entitled to look back on the destruction of Sodom, because he wasn't fully entitled not to be there himself. But there is another explanation in Chazal, which Rashi also comments, which means that it's harmonized with his relationship with Avram. For actually, he did something good for Avram. Namely, when Avram and Sarai in last week's parsha went down to Mitzrayim, and Avram says, it's dangerous if they know that I'm your husband, so say, Imrina Achosiat, say that you're my sister, and then we'll all be okay. Say, Chazal, Lot knows that that's not true. He knows that she's really Avram's wife, and not his sister. And he didn't say anything. And that was considered to be a merit for Lot, enough to get him out of Sodom. Now, that statement actually needs to be contemplated, because on the face of it, it doesn't seem to be a particularly major zechus. What does he have to do at the end of the day? Nothing. Just say nothing. And why would he? I mean, out of spite, he would say, actually, they're really married. And where will that leave him? So why is this considered to be a mitzvah of sorts at all? And yet, Mefarshim point out, Reb Shlomo Fischer discusses this in his drushas, that it was something of an isayon for Lot. If we just put ourselves into that situation, whereby Avram says, it's dangerous if they know that we're married to Sarai. So say that I'm your brother. How will that help? Well, two things. Leman yitavli ba'avurech, it will be good for me on your account. And Rashi comments there, yitnuli matanos, they'll give me gifts. And v'chaysa nafshi beglalech, and I will continue to live for you. You won't kill me. It's an interesting inversion, seemingly, of values. Benefit number one, presence. Benefit number two, life. I mean, how do these two go together? But as the Abarbanel explaining Rashi tells us, that this is the way that Avram wants to survive, because if he is Sarah's brother, then all potential suitors will come to him, and they'll come with all of their gifts, and they'll come with all of, and he can send them away. Don't call us, we'll call you. You're candidate number 378, it's a busy day, and it'll be a number of weeks yet. He's hoping to stay out their time in Mitzrayim by continuously receiving gifts as her brother, until they can just leave. That's Yitli Matanos. But in the meanwhile, there was a lot of Matanos accumulating for Sarah's brother, who's not really her brother. Says Shlomo Fischer, that's got to be rather painful to see for the one who really is her brother. That's Lot. We know that Lot has an affinity for money. In the end, it was the dividing point between him and Avram. And he sees that Abram presents himself as the brother, and he's raking in all of the gifts, and her actual brother just stands there. And no one's paying any attention to him. He just has to park the car, get the door, and he's not a significant personality. But he's the real brother. It was a bit of an historian for him. But he said, I've got to do the right thing. And that was considered a credit for him. And it's also important to note, if we would consider, is there an outstanding merit that Lot ever do a big mitzvah? You could say that the answer is in this week's parsha. I mean, right now. Because he basically risks his life for Hachnasas Orchim. As we see, and he's pleading for his survival just to be able to keep these guests. That seems to be a larger mitzvah than just keeping quiet. But somehow that isn't really the focus. And perhaps the reason why Al Derech HaPshat is because if at the end of the day he's only really getting out because of his relationship with Avram, then any mitzvah that's a catalyst will have to be a mitzvah that he did for Avram. It's going to have to be an Avram merit, because at the end of the day it's really his relationship with Avram that's the reason he's leaving, as opposed to any other mitzvah, large as it may be. But Rav Nosson Zvi Finkelzatzal, the Alter Slabodka, says something else which is very thought-provoking. For we think of mitzvahs as in terms of, well, there's many metrics. How much was accomplished, how much effort did one put in, but something else. And the Rambam himself says in Hilchos Tshuva, you never really know how big a mitzvah is. You don't know what was at stake for the person, what they had to overcome in order to perform this mitzvah. There's one significant difference between Lot's incredible Hachnosas Orchim and his relatively minor keeping quiet and saying that Avram is not Sarah's husband. And that is, says the Alter, Lot grew up in Avram's house. And for all of the trouble he caused, he has absorbed undoubtedly the way of the house. Avram is Hachnosas Orchim around the clock. And Lot grew up like that, which means that it's in his makeup, it's in his profile to put himself after Hachnosas Orchim. That's not taking anything away from him, but in a sense he is faithfully absorbing and replicating and expressing the value of Hachnosas Orchim, which is a certain level of merit. But actually, it is superseded by that other mitzvah that he kept quiet, because no one ever gave him chinuch in keeping quiet. This was, in a sense, a moral decision that he had to make entirely on his own. There was no chinuch in this area. He hadn't grown up, not one way, not the other. He was in a difficult situation. He had to make a decision. And all he had were his own moral resources to go on. And Lot says, no one's ever spoken to me about this. I haven't been exposed to this. It seems to me the correct thing to do is that, because it's as difficult as it is, to keep quiet. In that respect, it was a greater merit than even essentially his Mesiras Nefesh for carrying on a Midah that he had seen and absorbed all those years. So that's a very interesting, fascinating, in fact, insight in terms of what's considered, how greatness is measured vis-a-vis the things that we do. In any event, there is a third approach with regards to coming back to our question, why is Lot saved? And it seems that it's more, and this is also from Chazal, Al Shem Ha'asid. It's with an eye on the future. Lot himself is no great tzaddik. However, great things will come from Lot. Specifically, Rus HaMoaviyah, who then becomes Ima Shel Malchus, the matriarch of royalty, ultimately the mother of Mashiach. And as the Maharal explains in the Sefer Netzach Yisrael, it isn't that of all the places that she came from, she ended up coming from Lot. There's actually something about Lot that Rus needs, in fact, for royalty. And ultimately Mashiach will need to have a certain radical or revolutionary quality to be able to stare down whatever values exist in the world and completely overturn them for the sake of holiness. that is something that has its origins, although they are rather dubious and leave much to be desired, but that midah itself is actually the midah of Moav. For Moav specialize in chutzpah. It doesn't work to their advantage initially. But Lot's daughter calls her child Moav, and it's held against her from the father. She doesn't seem to have any shame. She doesn't care what anybody says or thinks. If one is doing the wrong thing, that's a terrible trait to have. If one is doing the right thing, and if you're leading a nation and revolutionizing the world, you've got to have it in a refined form, in a purified form, in a sublimated form, which means that Mashiach ultimately needs to come from Moav, from Lot. He needs those genes. And that's why the Medrash says, the famous Medrash, Rabbah, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Matsasi David Abdi, I found my servant David. And the Medrash says, where do you find him? Heichan Matsasiv b'Sodom. I found him in Sodom. How is David found in Sodom? Because it was a shidduch of chutzpah, really, between Lot, from whom Moav would come, and Sodom specialized in chutzpah of the highest order, making kindness illegal and making cruelty practically mandatory, to invert the legal system that way, to invert the moral compass, could only be done by a locale that specialized in chutzpah. And Lot found his place there, and that's where David was found and taken from there. And therefore, according to this approach, we see the salvation of Lot really with an eye on the future. We're not focusing on Lot. What will come from Lot? And therefore, he needs to be extracted from Sodom, taking with him the midah of chutzpah, which will then go through its refining process through the generations and enter the Jewish people with Rus. And with this in mind, perhaps we can get an insight into the Gemara's presentation of who it was that saved Lot. Michael. What's Michael got to do with Lot? Well, that's a good question. But then we should also ask, what's Michael got to do with Sarah? Of the three angels, his name doesn't give that much away. Because Raphael is Raphael, that's healing Avram. Gabriel is Gevura, that's a tailor-made name for destroying Sodom. Michael doesn't seem to have that characteristic. So what's the yichus of Yisrael? And he comes and tells Sarah she'll have a child. Except we know something else about Michael. Michael is called Sar Yisrael. Michael is the, of all of the malachim, he's the one that represents Bnei Yisrael in all of their endeavors. And now we can understand why he's the one that came and told Sarah that she's going to have a child. Her child is the future of the Jewish people. That is information that should be imparted to her by the Malach who represents the future of the Jewish people. So Michael, Sar Yisrael, tells Sarai that she will have a child who will then develop, his child in time will become Yisrael. And with that in mind, we can just conclude the sentence by suggesting that that's why Michael is the one that went on to Sodom to save Lot. And because if the Gemara perhaps concurs with the understanding that Lot was saved because of what would come from him in the future, what does come from him? Rus, and ultimately Mashiach, that's the future redemption of the Jewish people. Once again, that falls within the domain of Michael Sar Yisrael. He's continuing his job. First he takes care of Sarah to tell her she'll have a child, and then he takes care of the Mashiach, both times looking out for the interests of Bnei Yisrael. So that I suggest as a possibility with regards to the Gemara. But again, it wasn't the path that Rashi took. Rashi took the Raphael as the one who went on for reasons that the Maharal explained. Refua is the straighter line, Alpi Pshuto. So from here, we move on to Avram's famous tefillah for the people of Sodom, which happens once the Malachim leave, and then Avram has this protracted, actually, prayer on behalf of the people of Sodom. It is by far the longest conversation that Avram has with anyone in the Torah, and it's practically one of the longest conversations in the Torah. It just goes on and on. And 45, and then 40, and 30, and 20, and 10, each time. And what's important, therefore, for the way we would describe it, is in terms of the numbers. First Avraham asked for 45, like we said, then he went down to 40, to 30, to 10. That's how we would describe it in a very practical sense, arithmetical sense. But we need to look closer at the psukim. For when we do, we'll realize that there are changes that are occurring within this tefillah. It isn't just noch 10 and noch 10 and noch 10 until there's only 10 left. And the one who will guide us here is the one whose specialty really is to pay attention to these things, and that is the Malbim. So let us join in Perek Yudches, Pasuk Kach Beis. And this is really where the whole thing begins. And we'll see the attention to detail is just eye-opening. So those Anoshim, the Avram's guests, so they move on. Vayelchu Sodoma. Okay, they go to Sodom. For Avram, Odenu, Omed L'Pnei Hashem. And Avram is still there with Hashem. Now, on the face of it, this pasuk seems to be, for want of a better expression, setting the scene. Exit the Malachim, or Exeunt, as they say. And who's left? Avram and Hashem. And now the tefillah gets going. But the Malbim explains that there's more to it than that. This pasuk is actually the basis of what's to come, at least in the short term. For it's fascinating to consider, pasuk kaf gimel, Avram's opening words to Hashem are seemingly ones of outrage. It's not yet tefillah. The first thing he says, "Vayigash Avram ha'af dispet tzaddik in Russia." Pasuk kaf gimel. Wait, they killed the tzaddik together with the Russia? That's a bit of an assumption. But who said that's going to happen? But he keeps going. Maybe there's after this Bevel of Tisalam Makom, right? You're going to kill them all? Pasuk kafe, chalila lacham yasos kadavar hazeh. He's giving a whole lot of drasha, it seems. There's been no davening yet. This is Musar. Chalila lacham yasos kadavar hazeh. Lamit tzadik in Russia to kill the tzadikim with the Russia. Well, where does that come from? I mean, why does he think that that's going to happen? That he's already... raging against it. So the Malbim says the klal is, it's a very, obviously a very delicate idea, a very deep idea, but the Gemara says in Bavakam and Daf Samach that sometimes destructive forces are unleashed on the world and they really have quite a natural shape to them. They don't make necessarily distinctions between Tzaddikim and Rishayim. We find, for example, in the night of Makkas Bechoris, there was a mashkes of sorts. The pasuk refers to it. Lo yitein hamashkes lingofeskem. There's a destructive force. So stay indoors. Do not go outside because there's no accounting for what will happen, even if you're a tzaddikim. Kevan shiniten rishus lamashkes lahashkes. Once permission has been given for a destructive force to exit the world, it's not so straightforward for it then to make these exceptions and divisions. Eino mavchin ben tzaddik l'rasha. How does that relate to us? Because, says Malbim, look back at Pasuk Kach Beis, and we'll see who went to Sodom and who didn't go to Sodom. Vayifnu misham ha'anoshim vayelchu Sodoma. Those anoshim. Who are those anoshim? Well, one of them is Gavriel. He's a malach of destruction. Well, what about Hashem? You need, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be there in order to isolate and segregate the tzaddik from the Rasha. Where is Hashem? Still with Avram. For Avram Udenu Amed L'Fnei Hashem. That sounds like a situation that could erupt into just widespread destruction. And that's why Avram goes straight for that point. Ha'af Tispet Tzaddik in Russia. You're here still with me. They went down. That's a mashchis. The tzaddikim are in trouble. That's the launch. That's the basis of Avram's opening statement. Okay. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, if he'll find 50 tzaddikim, then in fact, he will spare the place. And actually, says the Malbim, that's a progression of Avram's original statement. Because if it's really true that the mashkis will not distinguish between tzaddik and Russia, it's, so to speak, the nature of a mashkis, then in the interest of not killing the tzaddik with the Russia, Maybe the opposite should happen. So then spare the Risharim together with the Tzaddikim, because distinguishing between them doesn't seem to be on the cards. If there's enough Tzaddikim that they shouldn't really go together with the city, so maybe spare the whole city. And Hashem agrees. And now, the number has been set at 50, and those were Avram's words in Pasuk Kaftalit, Ulai ish chamishim tzaddikim besocher, maybe there's 50, and Avram begins to whittle it down by 5 and then by 10s. If we look carefully at the Pesukim, we will see that each turn, each play, each additional request is prefaced in a slightly different way. Important to note. For example, Pasuk Kaf Zayin. So Hashem in Pasuk Kaf Vav said, if there's 50 tzaddikim, the place will be spared. Now, Pasuk Kaf Zayin, Bayan Avraham Vayomar, Hineinu Ha'alti L'daber L'Hashem, V'Anochi Ofra V'Efer. I've just now begun to speak about this, Ho'alti. I'm dust and ashes. And then goes on to ask for 45. So 45 is introduced by that expression. Hineinu Ha'alti, I've just now begun to speak. What if there's 5 missing? And Hashem says, that's okay, there's 5 missing. In the end of the Pasuk, Lo Ashkisim Emsa Hashem Aboy Mechamisha. Then, Pasuk Haftes, we're down to 45, Vayosef Od L'daber. Avram adds, that's how that move from 45 to 40, Imam Tzutan Arba'im, is presented. And Hashem says, also for Arba'im. Now what? Pasuk Lamed. Vayomer Ana Yicha L'Hashem Vadabera. Don't be angry at me, let me speak. And then he asks for 30. And Hashem says, I'll spare the whole place for 30. In Pasuk Lamed Aleph, as he goes to 20, he moves back to something that he said before. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Hineinu Ha'alti L'daber L'Hashem, I've just now begun, which isn't really true, because he began a few numbers ago. Maybe he can continue. But then he asks for 20, which he's given. And then, Vayomer, Ano Yichal Hashem Vadaber Achapam. Don't be angry at me, I would just like to speak. We note that each request is prefaced, it fluctuates, and it keeps, actually oscillates more correctly. From Al Yichal Hashem, Hineinu Ha'alti, and then back again, and then Hineinu Ha'alti, back again. What are we to make of all of this? I mean, how does each one present the request that is to come? That is the question. It's also very interesting to note, and the more we're medaktik, the more we'll get from these psukim. When it comes to moving down to 40 and to 30, so 40 is in Pasuk Kaftes. Hashem says at the end of Pasuk Kaftes, Vayomer lo e'eser, I won't do. Won't do what? Presumably won't do, he won't wreak destruction. Avor ha'arbayim. And similarly, in the next pasuk, towards the end, Vayomer lo e'eser imen sashem shloshim. I won't do. I find 30. But in pasuk Lamed Aleph, when Avram asks for 20, it says Vayomer lo ashchis ba'avor asrim. I won't destroy. Well, presumably that's what we were talking about all along. But for the first two times, it says lo e'eser. Now it's moved to lo ashchis, and finally, Pasuk Lamed Beis, when Avram asks for 10, Vayomer lo ashchis ba'avor ha'asara. What are we to make of all of this? Different introductions, different reactions. We saw it all as being just a question of going down in numbers. But clearly, there's more to it than that. And the Malbim explains, the key here is that Avram's request be divided into 2 general categories, because at a certain point in his davening, he shifts tactics. And let's see, through the Malbim, what that means. For, there's 5 cities here, as we know, Sodom, Amora, Adma, Tzvoim, and Tzoar, and Avram is looking to save all of them. And that's why he opens by asking, well, what if there are 50 tzaddikim, because 10 is the critical, you know, minion, even though they're not Jewish, but it's the concept of a minion is represented. Significant kehillah there within each. That should be enough. And that is Avram's opening request. But then, when Hashem agrees, so now Avram has to explain how he can be asking for less, because that's not normally the way negotiations work. And generally, you start at the lowest number and then see what you can get away with. Here, he's asked for 50 and it's granted. Etiquette would seem to dictate that he should not really push the point here, because that's chutzpahdik. You've got 50, or maybe 45, and then 40. How does Avram explain how he is doing this? So the Malbim says, that's why Avram prefaces his going down in numbers with the words, Vayomar, hinei noho alti ledaber el Hashem. I'm just beginning to talk about this. Meaning, I have no experience in this sort of thing. So I don't know what's correct, what's incorrect. Please don't hold it against me if I'm asking for more. Maybe I've completely overshot. My number 50 was made through lack of any type of experience or knowledge. And that, in a sense, gives me license to ask for less. Altogether? Yes. I have no idea. We're trying to focus on the good ones. No, we don't know. Presumably, whoever couldn't find a place to live anywhere else. So that's Hine Noha Alti. Okay, and Avram, in a sense, he gets his foot in the door to say, essentially by saying, I have no idea what I'm asking for. So please don't be angry if I ask for less. Except, why is he asking for 45, and then Vayosef, he goes from 45 to 40? That's, in a sense, easy to understand, because if there's just one missing, he's looking for a minion in each of the five cities. And if there's one missing, that one is practically negligible, and then that's a good place to start. But then Vayosef, in Pasuk Kaf Tes, Avram adds on to that, because essentially we're looking to use the idea of majority. Right, following the rove. That's really what's guiding Avram here. And therefore, even if there's not 45, but there's 40, it's a further application of rove, because if four of the five places have a minion, so even the place that doesn't, but four out of five, that's the majority, perhaps the place can be saved. And Hashem agrees. And now, says Malbim, Avram has to say something different. For when he goes from 40 to 30, Vayomer Anoyicha Lashem Vadaber, don't be angry at me, let me speak. Now, what's he speaking about? I mean, he's not speaking, he's asking. But he's speaking in a sense, this is Avram's way of saying that, don't be angry at me if I just express what we've established so far. Namely, I've asked for 40 and you said okay. And that's the reliance on the concept of following the majority. If four are okay, they'll save the one that's not okay, because four is more than one. So Avram is saying, without even asking for it really, please don't be angry at me, I'm a little bit behind, I just want to make sure that I've got the numbers right, but really we're saying that if there's 30, then that should also be okay. Because that's not a new request. It's actually just applying the concept of majority down to 3 for 2 as opposed to 4 for 1. So Avram, his way of asking for it is quite diplomatic. He's actually saying, well, presumably we've already said 30 is also okay. That's contained within, if you don't mind me just saying that. Okay. And Hashem agrees. So we're following the majority. However, if Avram's going to go any further, he's actually going to need to do something radically different now. Because he's got 30, I mean, of the five cities. If it's 3, less than 3 is not a majority. If he's going to save 2 by having 20, he's actually going to have to reverse policy almost. Because now, if you're only saving 2, what happened to the majority? If majority rules, then 3 out of them deserve to be destroyed, then maybe the other 2 should be destroyed along with them. Isn't that consistent with the original argument? And that's why Avram, at this point, having successfully gone down to 30, rejects the original argument and actually presents a counter argument. Namely, as long as there is one or two cities that are okay, why should they be swept along with the majority? Which is the complete opposite of what he originally argued. And that's why, from a certain point of view, Avram, went, as he moves from 30 to 20, now he's in the minority, starting again. It's a new tack. It's a new strategy. And that's why he begins, Hinei Nahu Alti, it's like I've just started, because I'm leaving the other davening triller behind. New idea. Well, if there's only two, they should be okay. They shouldn't be swept along with the other three that are bad. And Hashem agrees. And then Avram does his final play when he says, Ayichal Hashem Ladabar Chapam. Please don't be angry at me. I'm just making sure I understand everything that we've said so far. Because if two won't be swept along with three, then I guess also one won't be swept along with four. Isn't that really the same thing? And that's how he finally is able to ask for 10. So the Malbim really has explained to us how each increment is introduced in the way that it is. There are really two different arguments, and each one extended, and as Avram wings in another 10 missing, which is niflamod. And moreover, says the Malbim, that will explain to us the difference between lo ashkis versus lo e'eseh. Because when we remind ourselves that as long as Avram is asking for, let's say, 40 and 30, he's really saying that if most of the cities are okay, 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 5, then the others will also be saved with them. He's looking to apply the majority in that way. And that's why, for Hashem says in response to 40 and 30, lo e'eseh. Lo e'eseh means that he won't do anything. Because if all the cities will be spared, then Hashem won't do anything. That's true if there's a majority of cities okay, 40 or 30. But that changes, says Malbim. Because when Avram begins again, as we noted, as he moves to 20 and 10, so he's not looking to save all five cities anymore. He can't do that. On the contrary, he's battling that the one or two that are okay aren't swept away with the others. So that means the others will be punished. Just these two won't be taken with them. And therefore, says Malbim, because they're all in the same, they're called Arei HaKikar, they're all on the same plane, if they would all be destroyed, then the whole place would just be overturned. That's called Ashchis, that's complete destruction of those places. As long as there's one or two cities that will be saved, Hashem says, Lo Ashchis, I will not completely overturn the place. But he doesn't say Lo E'eseh, implying I won't do anything, because three and perhaps even four of the cities will be punished. Just not all of them. So lo e'eseh becomes lo ashkis. Every word is in place here with regards to Avram's request and Hashem's response. The only anomaly that needs to be addressed, which the Malbim does address, is that when it comes to going down from 50 to 40 to 45 in Pasuk Kafches, so Hashem says, "Lo ashchis imemtsa sham arba'im v'chamisha." I won't destroy if I find 45. If we're keeping tabs on the correct terminology, that seems inappropriate because if there's 45, everything should be saved. It should have been lo e'eseh as it is for 40 and 30. To that, the Malbim says very simply, the reason why Hashem said lo ashchis is because Avram asked, "Will you mashchis?" And you get what you ask for. The first time, as he's going from 52 to 45, he says, Hatashchis b'cham b'chamisha, will you destroy? So Hashem says, Lo ashchis, which actually means that other things might happen. Avram learned not to use any verbs past that point. He just says, let's say it's 40, let's say 30. He's not asking for a mashchis because he's actually got a limited response in his own terminology when he uses ashchis, and therefore he leaves it out and it becomes e'eseh, for 40 and 30, ashkis, ashkis. So this is the Malbim in his own inimitable way, working through the psukim here. It's something to behold. But what's fascinating is this is as a postscript really to this section, is a comment by one of the Chiddik masters, the Sefer Be'er Mayim Chaim, or Chaim of Chernovitz. For he raises a question, why is it that Avram started this way, first 50, then 45. Why didn't he ask for 10 straight away? To go to China? And really the question is, was Avram going for 10 the whole time? And he's just, let's say, warming up or seeing how much he can get away with? Or It could be that it never occurred to Avram. I mean, Avram's horizons as to in terms of what's possible broaden each time he receives a positive response. Perhaps initially he was never thinking of less than 50, but when Hashem said 50, so that gets Avram thinking. Maybe less, it's worth a try. He would never have thought in those terms. So in a sense, every response begets a further question. That would seem to be a Balabatish approach. So Avram gets emboldened each time. But the Be'er Ba'al Chaim says that something else happened. I mean, why is Avram davening for Sodom? It's actually a very complicated question. I mean, Sodom are Rishayim. And the Torah calls them Ra'im v'chatayim. If the Torah says they're Rishayim, that means they're Rishayim. And Avram is still davening for them, which is a very extreme point. But he needs, even Avram understands, if they're all Rishayim, there's not what to daven for. So there have to be some core group of tzaddikim there to save the place. So, what's the extent of Avram's tendency or inclination to see that they're deserving of being saved? Initially, 50. Less than 50, Avram can't bring it within himself to think that they should be saved for less than 50. But that changes, says the Be'er Ma'im Chaim. Why does it change? Because Avram davens for 50. And when he davens for 50, whenever anyone davens, they connect with Hashem. When he davens for mercy, he's connecting with Hashem, the source of mercy. And through that connection, Avram becomes more merciful. Which means by the time he's finished davening for 50, Avram looks at things differently. Maybe 45. I never would have said that 10 minutes ago. But what's happened in the meanwhile? What's happened to me? I've been davening. I've been connected to Hashem as the source of mercy. If you're connected to Hashem, you should draw some of that quality from the source of mercy. And Avram does with each tefillah. So by the time he's finished davening for 50, which is the lowest he could go, he realizes that he finds it within him to go lower. He davens for 45. And that is another connection, which then leads him to think, well, you know, maybe even 40. So Avram's move to less and less is a product of the success at tefillahs, which is simply a fascinating idea. And it reinforces the concept that the results of tefillah, that connection of tefillah, should endure beyond the tefillah. They should change the person post that point, and you should come to look upon things differently. In this case, it was Avram, through his davenings, who was able to get down to what essentially was the absolute bare minimum of 10. So that's the Hasidic view of Avram's going down here in these numbers. So, from the Parshanut of the Malbim, let's take a look at the Akeda at the end of the Parsha. Of course, a great deal to say. As a result of the Akeda, in fact, Avram changes, or more correctly, gives a name to the place, which is the Pasuk describes, and that's in Perek Kaf Beis, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vayikra Avram, Shema Makom, Hu Hashem Yireh. He calls the name of the place Hashem Yireh. The Medrash tells us very interestingly that that's the origins of the name of Yerushalayim. Originally, the place was called Shalem, as we saw in last week's Parsha, Makitzedek Melech Shalem. Avram calls it Yireh, and the two were fused to become Yerushalayim. And there's a great deal to say about that, not for now. But he calls it Hashem Yireh. But on a pshat level, Hashem Yireh means Hashem Shodi. It's a difficult pasuk. I mean, it's the name of a place. But just to understand on a straightforward level, what does it mean? What will Hashem see? And Rashi gives two perushim. What will Hashem see? The first perush, actually, which Rashi considers the pshat perush, it takes the word Yireh, not so much vision seeing, but decision seeing. Yireh in terms of Yivchar, will choose. For the word lirot in the Chumash can be a reference to choosing, like Yosef recommends to Paro, v'ato yere Paro ish chacham nevor. See, meaning a point, choose. So Rashi's first perush is Hashem Yireh, Hashem should choose. And what should he choose? This place. As this place has been sanctified through the Akedah, Hashem should choose this place as the where the divine presence should dwell. That's Hashem Yireh, should see in terms of choosing this place for the Shekhinah to reside. The second Pirush of Rashi is that Hashem should always see the Akedah, the event that happened here, it should always be a schus for Bnei Yisrael. In brief, those are Rashi's explanations. But the Meshech Chochmah has an incredible interpretation of the meaning of Hashem Yireh. What will Hashem see? And what's it got to do with the Akedah? There is a notion, says Meshech Chochmah, it's throughout the literature of Chazal, features in one way or another, that the essential nature, the essential core will of the Jew is aligned with the will of Hashem. So says the Gemara in Brachas, Ritzoneinu la'asas Ritzonecha. Our Ratzon is ultimately to do the Ratzon of Hashem. There's plenty that gets in the way, and it's easy to get distracted, but those are external layers. But the inner core is aligned with Ritzon Hashem. That's the basis of the famous halacha, that there are certain matters that a person, it's not valid unless a person wishes for it to be valid. And if he doesn't wish to be valid, so we kofen or so. He's beaten until he says he wants to do it. And the Rambam explains, because he does. His Yetzirah is getting in the way, so he's beating his Yetzirah. So that's the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah. That's a halachic statement based on this principle. Hasn't always been tried with great success, but that's the principle. So Meshech Chochmah says, we may wonder, where does this come from? Here we are, it's an established fact as far as the Gemara is concerned. This is the nature of the Jewish people. Ritzoneinu la'asas ritzonecha. When did it become that way? Or how did it become that way? Meshech Chochmah asks. And he answers, this was the product of the Akedah. This was the outstanding attainment of the Akedah. At the time that Yitzchak, together with Avram, was prepared to nullify his entire existence, because that was what was told to him through Avram as being Hashem's will, and there was just a hair's breadth between that his will and that actually happening, this embedded within him and all of his descendants now, that this is their core nature. They will do whatever needs to be done if that's Ritzon Hashem. Again, it doesn't always come out. Sometimes it's recessive. But it's always there. And it makes a difference, says Meshech Chochmah. There's a very interesting Yerushalmi in Masechet Sanhedrin, which says that when Hashem judges, he doesn't judge alone. So says the Yerushalmi. There's a court, there's a procedure, it's a process. And it elaborates, and there's psukim to this effect. There's malachim to the right and to the left, prosecution and the defense. Kadosh Baruch Hu dan eino dan yechidi, he doesn't judge by himself. The angels represent all the pieces of information and all the evidence and all the arguments. However, says the Yerushalmi, aval hu chos ein yechidi, but when it gets to the sealing of the din, Hashem does that by himself. Why does he seal by himself? Says Meshech Chochmah, because the common notion within the Medrash Rabbah, within Chazal, is that a malach knows what a person has done, but he doesn't know why a person did it, or what is behind a person's actions. A malach doesn't know what a person is thinking, what a person would like to do. You know, he sees actions on the ground. That's evidence. But so much of what becomes part of one's ultimate judgment is about what he really would like to do. What if he wanted to do a mitzvah and it didn't materialize? The Gemara says that's considered a mitzvah. That a malach will miss that. He doesn't know what a person wants to do. And moreover, and this is also important, even if he's done something wrong, it makes all the difference in the world if he doesn't really want to do it. It's not a full expression or an essential representation of the person. It makes a difference. It's still a negative deed, but it doesn't represent a negative personality. And that's why the chasima, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu will seal. He seals alone. Because there's input that only Hashem has access to. What's really going on inside the person? And we've suggested on the previous occasions, that's why on Rosh Hashanah, we end the bracha of Zichronos. And Zichronos is really about remembrance. It's the bracha of judgment, is Zichronos. We remember it by asking Hashem to remember the Akedah of Yitzhak for his descendants with Rachamim. So on the face of it, we're saying, well, it's such a great mitzvah, and we're his grandchildren, so schus avos, we're trying to cash in on the credit from that mitzvah. But I think there's something much more is happening. We're asking Hashem, remember the, why just the Akedah? Bring them all in. The more the merrier. Why just the Akedah? Because it's the Akedah that defines us. We ask Hashem as much as whatever we've done in the past year, everything would look very different before the Akedah, because if you just remember the Akedah and what it means about us, everything that we've done this year looks different. All of our mitzvahs have now become much more empowered. All of our averos become depleted. They don't disappear, but they're no longer faithful representations of us. It makes a big difference. It's the best thing we can do. That's how we end the Bracha of Zichronos. And with this concept, actually, of the Meshech Chochma, perhaps we may also explain a rather puzzling Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos and Daf Kuf Kaf Zayin that with regards to Dan Nekafs Chus, judging others favorably, which is considered a outstanding trait, Pirkei Avos tells us to do it, Have Dan Eskal Adam Nekafs Chus, where possible. And the Gemara says, Kol Hadan Nekafs Chus, one who judges others Nekafs Chus, so Min HaShamayim Danin Oso Nekafs Chus. That's Midah Keneged Midah. If he judges others favorably, so he himself is judged favorably. And the statement of the Gemara seems to be very difficult to understand for a simple reason. There isn't really much about a person's actions that he needs to be judged favorably for. The whole concept of Dan Nekafs Chus is that you don't know the whole story. You see someone and he's doing something and it looks a little bit... So you don't know the whole story, and what you do is you say, well, presumably there's background and it's pikuach nefesh or something, and there's a very good reason for it that I don't know. If I was there, I don't. But min hashamayim, they know the whole story. So what room is there to be done the kafs chus? It doesn't seem to have traction in that relationship. Except I think based on the Meshech Chochma, we understand that even min hashamayim, it makes a big difference. At the din stage, all of a person's deeds, they can be looked upon benevolently or less favorably. Does he really mean it? He didn't, or was it the product of some other momentary confusion? He doesn't really mean it. How can you tell? The best way to express what you really mean is the way that how you view others. If you are inclined to say, oh, I'm sure there's a perfectly good explanation, that is an expression of a certain goodness within you. That's why you're inclined to look upon it in that way. It's born of a notion that people are essentially probably going to do the right thing because that's what you would like to do. And once that's out, Semina Shamayim, they judge you, the Kafschus. They wouldn't know necessarily otherwise. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. But if Shamayim, referring to the din stage, Malachim, have a window into your essence as expressed by the interpretations that you give to the deeds of others around you. So this, says Meshech Chochma, if it all comes from the Akedah, that's what's behind Avram naming the place of the Akedah Hashem Yireh. Hashem should see. Because he's asking that as a result of the Akedah, there is a certain nature that has been born of the Jewish people, and his prayer is Hashem should always see that, because it's something only Hashem can see, as he seals the judgment. Beautiful interpretation of Meshech Chochma. So just to conclude, I came across this morning a very, very profound discussion of the Alshich with regards to the aisle that Avram offers when the Akedah is kind of finished, or we think it's finished, but it's not finished. It has a haftorah to it. And because Yitzhak is down, but then Avram looks around and he sees an aisle in Pasuk Yud Gimel of Perek Kapeis, Vayisa Avram es Einav, Vayar, Vine Ayelacha, Nechaz Vasvach Vekana, he sees an aisle and he takes it, Vayaleh Le'olah Tachas Beno, and he brings it as a korban. It's interesting just to, on a basic level, to consider, I mean, how is this the completion of the Akedah? I mean, it's very nice and it's always good to bring a korban, but, I mean, the Akedah's finished. This is another thing now. It's not Yitzchak. Although we know that it should be as if it was Yitzchak, but how is this, what's the meaning of the Akedah finishing in this way? We know that this ram, this isle, had a very interesting history. It's basically as old, practically, as the history of the world itself. For it's one of the things that was created Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmoshos, which makes it very old by the time Avram comes to bring it as a, although perhaps it didn't show, but it's been ready since Sheish Yisrei Bereishis, which is a long time. And the Alshich asks a Poshet Hashayla, I mean, why do you have to create? That's not going to be used for so long. So just a year or two before the Akedah, a ram can have a baby ram and arrange for it to be in the right place at the right time. Why is it so important that this, it's been there already from since Sheish Yisrei Bereishis? The Medrash tells us in Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, in Perek Lamed Aleph, that from this ram, it was put to extensive use. Nothing went to waste. Its sinews, says the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, became the strings on the harp of David HaMelech. The hide, or of the hide, of this ram became the belt, the Ezor of Eliyahu HaNavi. And the shofaros, of course, one for Matan Torah and one for Yemos HaMashiach. I mean, that's everything of it was used. It was all went for a mitzvah. But what is the meaning of this? And how are these things related at all? Eliyahu's belt and the David's harp and the shofar and Matan Torah. I mean, they all the same origins, but are they any affinity to each other? So the Alshich says something which is so incredible. These things that were created Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmoshos, I think we normally look upon them as just like the final chap in the Bria before it's too late. It's the last minute before closing of Bria. But there's two important things about this list of things, and there's a few things. Number one, if they're created Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmoshos, that means they're created in a time which, let's say, characteristically is part weekday and part Shabbos, even though officially Shabbos is not a day of creation. But Shabbos is the spiritual day of the week. It's the nefesh of the week. And what that means is things that are created on that border, Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmoshos, they're actually more spiritual creations. So that timing, it's not, if not now, when? It's now. And this is the only time, the appropriate time to create things like this. They have a certain spiritual quality. They have a certain Shabbistic quality that they're able to wing in when it's not yet Shabbos, but it's still officially days of creation. But there's something else. All these things that were created on Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmoshos, they were the only things that came into the world after Adam and Chava had already sinned. What that means is everything else in the Bria, we look upon Adam himself as the final point of the Bria. So then he's all created, and now the history of the world begins, and very quickly on that first day was the first sin. But that came after creation was finished. But that's actually not so, because it was that Friday that they ate from the Eitz Hadas, and then just at the end of Friday you have this whole new list of things that are created. They are the only things in the world that were created post-Chet Adam HaRishon. And moreover, says the Alshir, if they're created post-Chet Adam HaRishon, they're created in response to the Chet. They're still Brias, but they're the beginning of the, they're the tools for the rectification of the Chet. Which is, it's a fantastic way of, fascinating way of looking at them. It's still Bria days, but something's happened, and there, it's the final segment of Bria comes in as a response to that. The critical rectification event that rectified began the rectification of the Chet Eitz Hadas was actually the Akedah, says the Alshich. He brings a number of Meforshim who state this. For our purposes, the Chet Eitz Hadas was Adam, in a sense, swaying after his thoughts as to how he could better himself, better his position in life, contrary to what he was told by Hashem. The Akedah is the absolute opposite of that, where Avram's thoughts would lead him away from the Akedah. But Hashem says, you've got to kill Yitzchak, and that's what he did. The ability to do that was the complete reversal of direction of the Chet Eitz Hadas, and that's where the Tikkun began. And therefore, no sooner had the Akedah finished, but then this ram made its entry, because it's actually one of the tools to continue and further the process of rectification of the Chet Eitz Hadas. We find, as surely as Avram suspended his own thoughts, unlike the Chet Eitz Hadas, well, so did the Jewish people at the time of Matan Torah, Na'aseh V'Nishma. Na'aseh V'Nishma, in a sense, was a continuation of the Akedah. That's why the horn of the ram of recovery from the Chet Eitz Hadas were sounded, that first one, at the time of Matan Torah. Moreover, the Eitz Hadas was also caving in to physical temptation, as the Pasuk does state, Tova Eitz Lemachal, and therefore, says the Al-Sheikh, part of that ram became the Azor of Eliyahu, right, the garment of Eliyahu. Eliyahu is Malach HaBris. I mean, that's his, he represents the elevation and sanctification of physical living, which is also a statement in protest of the Eitz Hadas. And finally, says the Al-Sheikh, part of the sin of Adam HaRishon is that he either believed and then began himself to speak ill of Hashem. First of all, accepting it from the Nachash, that it isn't true that this is that this tree is bad for you. It's good for you. Hashem is jealous of you. You'll become like him if you do that. So he's holding you back. He doesn't have your best interests at heart. And that really translated into Avram not appreciating, failing to appreciate, or even being suspicious of all the good that Hashem had done for him. Which is why his response when he's told, why did you eat from the tree, was to say, well, you gave me this wife, and she fed me from the tree. And Rashi says that's actually, he is criticizing Hashem for giving him a wife. Well, what do you expect if you give me a wife like that? Because he's already moved past the point that he can see, well, Hashem maybe gave him a wife to help him. Ezer Kenegdo. He doesn't think that Hashem is trying to help him anymore. He's brought into the Nachash, and that's a terrible, it's a conspiracy-minded and paranoid, and he's only distancing him further and further from Hashem. And that's why the sinews of this ram became the strings of the harp of David HaMelech. Because David HaMelech's songs of Tehillim to Hashem, thanking him and praising him and appreciating him, that's also part of the recovery of the Eitz Hadas. Because you can't veer from Hashem's instructions without beginning to second guess them and be cynical of them and ultimately to be suspicious of them. That's a bad state to be in. The recovery begins with Adam, with David HaMelech. And that's how the ram became also part of his heart. And Adam HaRishon himself, according to tradition, was the one who composed Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbos as Shabbos came in, which begins with the words, Tov Lehodos Hashem. If Adam is saying, if I learned anything from this experience, I made a mistake, I doubted everything Hashem did for me and thought he was only trying to hold me back, that was where my mistake began. He gave me a wife for a reason. He told me to even it's a chayim for a reason, to stay away from the Eitz Hadas for a good reason. If I'd been appreciative enough, none of this would have happened. Tov Lehodos Hashem, and he goes on to say, Alei Asor of the Alei Naval. Asor is a 10-string harp of David HaMelech. Avram, Adam is already encouraging him to praise Hashem in order to bring that about. And so it's a completely new perspective generally on these things that were created by Nashmashas. They have such a special role to play, and specifically with regards to this aisle, which began a process which Yiritz Hashem will look forward to its culmination with the other shofar there of the aisle, Tekabu Shofar Gadol L'Chiraseinu V'Rehev Yaminu.